From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of Night, and welcome back to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing with a new haircut rocking.
How about that?
The heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my brother, Count Pank himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
I got the vampire look going on, the little peak right there. Yes, fresh haircut for this great weather we're having here.
Cold. It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold.
This is the coldest spring I think I've ever experienced, Count.
How about that, though? I better go fly south for the winter.
It's spring. Not even spring. Are you just going to fly south?
I'm going to keep flapping until I reach warm weather. How about that?
I'm supposing if you get out of Chicago, it's nice.
Eventually, yes. Eventually. But yeah, been brutal here. We had a tease of warm weather, but you know what? It's not ready to go yet. The winter, almost winter-like temps, still it's stay here in the
40
Midwest.
40 to 50. I mean, I usually like the 50s, but I digress.
Nice.
Colin, it's been a while.
Yeah, Bob.
I guess it's time as ever to talk about it, right?
Sure.
So, folks, you might be wondering where I've been over the past few weeks, and if you've been keeping up with our social media, you would know the reason why we've been kind of quiet is because, unfortunately, on April 3rd, my father did pass away due to complications from his Alzheimer's and dementia, so it kind of kicked in full gear. We got the diagnosis in December. We thought we had time to kind of get things figured out, get him balanced on medicine, etc., and then one thing led to another, and unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way. We went from having time to months, and it progressed fast. And unfortunately, it just all kind of happened. So when we did our last episode, we recorded with Nat and Elliot for the ACG Paranormal episode. We got the episode recorded 2 days. I don't even think it was 2 days. It might have been even just a day later. Yeah. My father went on hospice care, and yeah, because either Wednesday or Thursday, he went on hospice care, and then he passed that Sunday, and it's been kind of just really hard to, it's been very hard to do anything,
of
right?
Course.
You lose,
understandable.
You lose somebody, it's one thing, and you lose your father, it's, you know, it's really hard, you know, and I haven't been the same. I was going to take a little bit of sabbatical, but I don't think I'd be doing my father any justice by taking one. It's not going to be the world's best episode we've ever done this week, but it's I have some research. I'm ready to put it out. Next week we have an election thing going on here at the studio, so we weren't going to have an episode next week, and I didn't want to keep putting it off. So, you know, I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to at least produce a show for you. Mm-hmm. It's back to normal very soon, whatever my new normal's going to be. And I was debating what I wanted to talk about tonight. And I, you know, at first I was like, ghost story, right? And I realized I didn't have it in me to talk about ghosts right now.
Yeah.
And I will. I'll be back to that point. Yeah. We talk about death a lot on the show, right? We talk about death being kind of like this new beginning and this whole circle of life thing and the concept of, you know, death is only a beginning of something different. You shred this mortal coil and you move on from it. And I will tell you that if I didn't have the knowledge that I did, right? If I didn't have my paranormal background and what I study with the afterlife and death, et cetera, and the things that go bump in the night, this would have been a lot harder for me to deal with. There's a lot of uncertainty in death that I've been dealing with up to this point, and not one piece of uncertainty was what happens when you die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finances, making sure my mother's taken care of, those are uncertainties. And is my mom going to be okay? Blah, blah, blah. I did not have one single doubt in my mind during my father's time what that uncertainty was going to be. And that was comforting. I did have that comfort going into it, knowing that there was something after this. We have theories of what that something is, but that's the comfort I had. And if I could give just like a message to everybody out there in the Children of the Night, I have two. One is a big thank you. We had a ton of outreach from a lot of the fans checking in on me, making sure I'm okay, sending their condolences. Those are important things. Like that's amazing. We have the best fan base in the entire world. I tell everybody that we're very happy with the people we have.
For sure. Yeah. A fantastic fan base. I know we got messages.
Yeah.
Comments just outpouring there, Bob.
Yeah, and it's great. I can't thank you guys enough for that. And the other thing I want to stress to all of you is to check on your elderly. Make sure they're okay. My father, up to this point, was a steel worker for 47 years. He had the same job at the steel mill. And he always joked about how he was going to go, because in our family, we looked at death a very specific way, and that was he was going to die of a heart attack, because we didn't toy around with the concept of death. It's going to happen to us. And Dad always said he was going to go from a heart attack or he was going to die at work. No one would have ever expected that this disease was going to happen to my father, and it did. And my thing I could really stress to all of you is please check on your elderly. Make sure they're okay, because this disease, it's a very painful, very not talked a lot about disease, and it's awful. It's horrible. And you don't see people advocating for the concept of Alzheimer's, because you can't advocate yourself. You know what I mean? That's something I learned. Seth Rogen's one of the people that talk about this in Popular Light. And Seth Rogen had a quote of, the idea is that you don't have people that are spokespeople for Alzheimer's, because people who have Alzheimer's can't speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's slowly killing, people's grandparents, or in my case, my father's. And just check on them, man. It's as simple as making a phone call. If you have an elderly neighbor and you know you're not seeing people going and checking on them, family or friends or kids, whatever it might be, just knock on the door. Say, hey, how you doing, Make some brief conversation, because you never know what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And they might not even, in my dad's case, wouldn't even show signs that they were sick. I took my father to the doctor in December when he got his diagnosis, because he made a comment that had me concerned. Mm-hmm. And that's something I get to live with now forever. Is like, I caught it, I guess. I didn't catch it in time to be able to get my dad on his medicine to take care of him, but it's just one of those things. And I feel for every single one of you out there in the world that ever lost a parent, because I'm right there with you, and I'm right there with you from this horrible disease. Awful. So that's really all I have to say on the matter, guys, is like, check your elders, check on them, make sure they're okay. Make sure, finances are in order. Make sure you have these hard talks with your loved ones too. What do you want done with you when you pass away? Your physical remains? Where is your finances at? How is the, who has connections to understand about your life insurance policies? Those are questions and conversations you need to have with your loved ones ASAP. As that's my other bit of advice from this, is trying to figure out how to get nursing care for somebody with Alzheimer's. Where is the life insurance policies? When you retire, how does somebody collect your 401k? Those are things you find out. But the sooner you have those conversations, the better. So those are just my PSA, guys. I don't want to harp on this too much, but I just wanted to give you guys an explanation. Obviously, I've been gone, but before that, things were kind of bumpy on when we've been able to do a show, and that's because, well, I've been kind of dealing with a lot lately, and it is what it is, you know? Yeah.
Well, and Bob, too, you know, you mentioned it before, your dad, a biggest fan of Bob After Dark.
Absolutely.
Windy City Ghostbusters, and he's going to continue on listening
you know,
to Bob
like
After Dark.
I'll tell you, I had a internal debate with my mother and my brother, right? That my father chose to be cremated because there's several reasons, but my brother wanted me to bring my dad on the show to sit on the table with me. And mom was like, yeah, you should take your dad, put his urn up on the table, right? I'm not going to put dad on a table. It's, but I will tell you, everybody, like, I miss my dad tremendously, and he's here with me. Like, I know that. And I've had some weird experiences, and I'll share the weirdest one with you guys here before we, you know, dive into the actual episode. The strangest bit that happened to me was my father, the day before he passed, or 2 days before he passed, my father was comatose at this time. Won't go into details what happens to you when you get to a certain point with the disease, but my father's comatose. He's laying on the bed in hospice, and I got there a little later. I was dealing with a lot, obviously, and I couldn't make that drive. I've been making that drive every day, and it was killing me. My mother got there before I did, and Ben, Dr. Ben Vanerson, drove down to make sure I could get to see my father so I didn't have to drive for a day. Needed a break. So I get down to nursing home, the hospice care, and I got there. My mom was tired. She was up there every day with my dad we all were. When hospice kicked in, it's one of those things like I was there 6 to 8 hours a day, every day up until when he passed. And I told my mom, I'm like, take a walk, you know, go to the bathroom, get something from the vending machines, get some fresh air. That's important. So I'm sitting in the room by myself with my father, and my father is comatose, meaning he is not going to talk to me. He is unresponsive to communication. And I'm sitting there and I'm kind of diddling around on my phone, just whatever. And I'm talking to my dad as if he could understand me anyway. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching, you know, had the TV on in his room. And all of a sudden, my dad's TV in his room turned to static, and the battery-operated clock stopped working in his room. Now, if the battery-operated clock stopped, I would have blamed it on a bad battery. If my dad's TV stopped working, I would blame it on a bad TV signal. The fact that both of them went out at the same time, I kind of stood up and I was like, well, that's kind of strange. I poked my head out in the hallway to see if I could hear other TVs going on, and my dad's neighbors all around them, up, you know, across and side by side. Every one of those I heard, TV's on. All right. And I'm going to assume their clocks were working too. So I go back in the room, and being the curious Bob that I am, I sit down at this chair and I'm staring at Dad, and I said, "Hey, Dad, who's here with me?" And I said, "Aunt Pat." My Aunt Pat was my dad's sister. She passed like 15 years ago. I said, "Is Aunt Pat here?" Obviously I'm not going to get a response, and I'm looking for something. And I said, Uncle Lenny, was my dad's brother who passed away 2 years ago. And finally I got to his mom, my grandma Stella's name. Cause I paused and I said, "Is your mom here? Is grandma Stella here?" And I kid you not, my dad wiggled his eyebrows at me. I'm like, well, I guess, you know, if that's the case, you know, and I sat back down and I kind of stared off into the distance for a few minutes. And I said, "Hey, you know, if you're here for my dad, just make sure he's got clear passage." And keep in mind, like, I didn't freak out so much. I took some photos of the area around, And I tried to do everything I could to hone in my senses to kind of pick up on what that was. But man, I've done dozens and dozens of paranormal investigations in my day.
Yeah.
I've studied this stuff. I've, you know, been around things that were very odd. And there are a lot of things I can explain. But in that instance, during that moment, I cannot explain what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most strange experience I've had in a very long, long time. So that was my strange experience I've had since I've started, you know, since everything's been going on. People have asked me, has my dad come back and say anything to me yet? He's, there's been weird things that have happened around me and my sister. I'll be like, oh, hey, dad, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, my dad wasn't around his mom for, you know, 50 years, 55 years. I'm like, he's going to go spend some time with his mom and he'll come see me when he's ready or whatever. But mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes, Bobby, you just can't explain it. No matter how hard you try, you rule out everything, you just can't explain it.
Right.
Yeah, and this is what happened here. Some things aren't meant to be explained, Bob. Some things are not meant to be explained.
I guess not.
Yeah, so again, though, but what a great community Bob After Our Community is reaching out during this time.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So this episode today, dedicated to you, Dad, wherever you're at in the entire universe, whatever afterlife had in store for you, I hope you're happy. I hope you're comfortable. And just know that I miss you 1,000,000%. I think about you every day. And just know if you can hear me, you're more than welcome to come visit me at any time. Mom told you don't come visit her, but you can come visit me whenever you want. I'm looking forward to that day when I can have my my paranormal experience with my father.
Yeah.
I got some things lined up to go speak to some investigators so I can get some, see if he's kicking around in spirit. Yeah, I got almost tears in my eyes, man.
Well, and hey, he has called in sometimes before on the program. Phone lines are open.
Phone lines are open, Dad, or anybody else there in the universe that are listening.
219-845-1100.
That's 219-845-1100. You're welcome to give a call in. Say hello, anybody that's listening in radio land right now. I know podcasters listen to this after the fact.
You can't call in on a podcast.
You can. You just got to call when we're live, yeah. And you can hear your voice after the fact. But anybody out there in radio land or the TuneIn app that are listening to this, feel free to give a call in.
Sure.
Maybe if there's some of the old Kishka Gang or East Chicago crew that's hanging around, you're welcome to call in and share a memory of Dad. So rest in peace, Bob Anderson Sr., the blue-eyed brother from East Chicago, as they called him, and the steel mill rat of the region, father, husband, papa, best friend, and overall my hero. I'm fighting back tears, but this one's for you, Dad. I love you so much, and I miss you. Go run, okay? You know, my father was a polio survivor at that, and still managed to work in a mill for 47 years. But, you know, I normally on the show here, guys, if this is your first time ever listening, I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Oh,
I'm sure you're like, whoa, I got into a heavy episode. Yeah, he came in at an interesting time, to say the least, but Bob After Dark, we're a paranormal show. We talk about legends, lore, and supernatural things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky. We also typically do weird news stories. I don't have any this week. We're just kind of doing something very basic, just to kind of get my feet wet and get the ball rolling again. But usually we split the show up twice. We usually look at news articles that are weird, strange, the unexplained, weird advances in science that are borderline science fiction. So we usually do that. We do viewer mail, and then we have lore of the week. But this week, we're just going to do the lore of the week. We're going to kind of go cut it, not cutting it short, but we're just going to focus on the lore of the week this week. And Count, you've met my father countless times.
Of course.
Your father and my father were amigos back in the day, and they were hanging around too. So if I was to say, Count Panic, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think of my father?
Oh, man. Well, he is, of course, a proud Polish person.
And that's where I'm going to stop you. But go on. Go on.
White Sox.
Yes. You are correct.
But I was okay. First one was Polish.
I tried to find ghost stories of Comiskey Park.
Oh, wow.
I could not find anything.
You would think there would be some kind of ghost story there.
D- the disco destruction, right?
Yeah.
But there's I couldn't find a legitimate ghost story from Comiskey Park. So if anybody out there knows of a ghost story from Comiskey Park or Sox Field or what is it these days?
It's a guaranteed rate field.
Yeah, I remember it was U.S. Cellular Field for a while, but whatever it might be, I still call it Comiskey. That's what I grew up knowing. That was my father's favorite baseball team and favorite sports team. My father was a diehard Sox fan, but on top of that, my father was a very proud of his heritage Polish person, a proud Polish male.
Yeah.
Even to the point, I remember when I joined the Eastern European Alliance, it's, you know, a fraternity for, you know, the kind of thing like a Moose Lodge or something. I joined that. My father was so proud of me. And so I sat back and I was like, well, I will do a Polish episode for you, Dad. And I, there is a lot of strange that happens in Poland.
Poland's big in the paranormal community, Bob, isn't it?
We have dragons.
Okay.
There's mermaids.
Yep, I remember the mermaids.
The mermaids. Yeah. I was gonna. You could do an entire episode dedicated on the Polish mermaids, which we'll do maybe down the line.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a Bob Anderson, you know, a salute to Bob Anderson month where we talk about these stories in full. I don't know. I don't know what the proper celebration of life is for my dad, but I have 10 of Polish lore creatures, not cryptids. Some of these are like clear fables, but it's still an important part of what we do here on the show.
No, for sure.
So without further ado, thank you to culture.pl for their article that I was able to borrow some information from, because fun fact, there's not a lot of good translations from Polish to English out there online. And I know for a fact I'm going to butcher a lot of these.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So to you, Dad, I love you. This episode's for you. Count Panic.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I am ready, Bob.
Okay.
And we're both Polish, too. We are both.
I want to point, obviously, yes. I am Polish, but Count Panic is the Polish vampire from East Chicago.
Not the Polish disco demon.
Disco demon... is not on this list because it's literally three sentences.
He's had his day in the sun.
We talked about the Polish disco demon on the show.
Yeah.
But probably the biggest piece of Polish lore is the Wawel dragon or the Wawel dragon, W-A-W-E-L. Are you familiar?
I can't say I am, Bob.
I'm sure your dad, if your dad's listening, John's listening, I'm sure he knows some of these.
Okay.
But the Wawel dragon is probably considered like Poland's big mythological thing. Other than the mermaids. But let's talk a little bit about this dragon. And again, the Thank You Culture PL. Probably the most famous mythical creature in Poland is the Wawel dragon, which is said to have terrorized the citizens of Krakow long, long ago. It is described in legend that dates back as far as the 12th century. And according to the most popular tales about it, the fantastic being dwelled in a cave beneath the Wawel castle. The townsfolk offered animals to the dragon to keep its wrath at bay. But sometimes offerings didn't prove sufficient. The dragon would leave its den in broad daylight, and with horrifying roars, it would attack various beasts, horses and cattle, pulling carts or murdering the animals and various other things. It would turn its anger towards men, and when it was tired of the cattle and they didn't, and if they didn't hide in a safe place, it would eat their torn, ripped flesh. So this dragon, was causing chaos along the Polish countrysides. But of course, there was a hero that stepped up.
Not the Polish disco demon.
No.
Oh, okay.
A Polish shoemaker.
Oh, wow.
Fortunately, a cunning shoemaker eventually tricked the demon into eating a dummy cow filled with sulfur. And as a result, the dragon suffered from an unquenchable thirst and drank too much water from the Vistula River that it exploded.
Really? Just like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
This cunning Polish shoemaker stepped up to the plate and gave it something with sulfur. It caused the dragon to want to drink some water, and it drank too much water, and its stomach exploded.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's one way to do it.
Now, these days, if you go to Krakow, you can actually see the Wawel dragon.
How can you see it?
It's on display. They have a statue of it that several times a year they'll actually breathe fire and smoke from it too. And I got to see this dragon.
Really?
It was on display at the Milwaukee Polish Festival.
Really? They brought the...
They brought it to... I don't know if it was the exact statue, but I've seen a replica. It might have been. But I got to see the statue, and it's this giant black metal structure of this dragon that would breathe smoke and fire because it was this dragon that caused chaos along the Polish countrysides. And it took a clever clever shoemaker to take it down.
Was it as terrifying in a statue form that I could imagine to be in a rugged dragon form too?
Yeah, it is. It's a giant dragon, and this thing, it perches up on its claws, and it's got wings that step out, and this thing stands upon a rock and just breathes fire. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Something to see there, Bob.
Absolutely. Did you ever hear this story before?
I can't say I have, but you know, if there's one thing that would be able to defeat a dragon, a dangerous dragon, it'd be a Polish shoemaker from the countryside of Poland. And so, you know, people underestimate the shoemakers out there. We still have shoemakers out there, right?
Yeah, people make shoes. We wear
shoes.
Yeah,
but like the old days, you go by
a cobbler, I think.
A cobbler, yeah.
A cobbler, I don't think so.
The town cobbler is what you want.
The town cobbler is the dragon slayer.
That's a feel-good story right there.
I would say so.
How about a statue for the cobbler?
I think it's just a dragon story that's the fascinating part.
Okay. The guy, the cobbler gets no credit whatsoever in this story, but okay.
All right, you ready to hear about this next one?
Yeah.
All right, so this next story is the Lublin Serpent. In the city of Lublin, there's a legend about a mythical creature that would protect the town's inhabitants from dragons. I think the people of Krakow needed this serpent. The being's Polish name is Szemiw, which translates as serpent or Slavic dragon. And I will spell that for you. Z-M-I-J, and Z's got the little umlaut above it.
That's so. Pronounced, yes. Despite us being Polish, our pronunciation is still
a little
off. Yes.
If Big Frank's listening right now, I could probably use a hand.
Stan Stefanski, get out
of
here.
If John Ponick is listening, I could use a hand right now.
Polish is off here a little
bit. Yeah, the Polish is off, but this Polish name is Szemiw, which is the serpent, and it translates, again, to serpent or Slavic dragon. And they... Poland really likes to make monuments to their creatures that of lore. So whereas the dragon has this statue that sits in Krakow, there is a building with serpent tentacles that come out the windows of this building in Lublin, which is where this thing was said. Mm-hmm. And in this building with these giant green and purple tentacles that come out, they tell the story behind it. Those who say it say it's a reptile with a singular pair of legs, paws equipped with more claws, wings, and three heads attached to long necks. The serpent would wave its long snake-like covered with scales and tipped with venomous spike. People believed it was the ruler of snakes, a guardian of justice and a protector of waters and sowing. The serpent had power over lightning and fire, and it would cause anything to happen in the sky, and it would protect people from attacks from airborne dragons. The serpent is said to have resided on a wooded hill in a place where you can go to today and find on Zmigrod Street, Zmigrod Street. And the name of the street is other than the Serpent's Town, so if you translate that specific name of the town into it, it's translates to that, or the town protected by the serpent. Recently, there has been a new sighting of the long-absent Slavic dragon. Hmm. During the Festival of Lublin Legends in 2019, its necks and tails were protruding from the windows of the historical Crown Tribune building in Lublin's own town. The protective beast's appearance was a result of good installation, which I was talking about before they put it up there. And it's a really cool building. It's got these tentacles and the heads coming out. So there's the story of the serpent that would protect Poland from dragons, because apparently there's a problem with dragons in Poland.
I was gonna say there must be a big dragon problem in Poland. Now, did we break it down? Is there a country that is known for having the most dragon?
Apparently,
issues?
Poland,
but
Poland and Japan, because Japan's always got those stories of this, dragons as well. But never would have thought, you know, Polish dragons.
Is there any case out there where the dragons are on the good side of things? I mean, a good dragon.
James from Peoria.
Is he a good dragon?
I would. He's a
or
good,
does he know about good dragons?
He's a good dragon, I would say.
Okay, all right. But you know, all these stories, just terrible stories about dragons. You want to?
We even needed a. Dragons. We needed another serpent, basically Ghidra from the Godzilla franchise, to defend us from dragons, the Polish folk.
Yeah, stuff we got to worry about like that out there in Poland. I don't know what the ratio is of Polish dragons nowadays, if they're still out there in Poland.
I don't
know.
We got to worry about the Polish disco demon.
The Polish disco demon. Equally as terrifying as a Polish dragon.
All right. Yeah. This next one is called the Treasurer.
Treasurer.
Another mythical being from Poland is the Skarbnik, or the Treasurer. The Treasurer is a demon in the shape of an old man with a white beard and eyes that glow in the dark. He can be encountered in coal mines of the Silesia region. According to the most widespread legends about him, he is a former miner who truly loved working underground. When he was dying, he asked God to let him remain forever in the proximity of coal. His wish was granted, so now he roams the coal mines. There is a written in Silesian mythology book, which is published in the Lithuania Ludwig magazine. A decent ghost this is, dwelling in the old goves and coal mines. He actually is a very decent ghost. You just have to watch not to anger him, for he helps the miner with his work. He'll come with assistance when you need to raise a derailed coal cart and put it back on track. He'll help with serving huge chunks of coal, and if a miner is lethally endangered by a roof fall, he knocks him beats in an angered upon manners as if to warn or draw attention back to him. If you see the treasure for yourself, you can do so. A statue, once again.
Another statue.
They built a statue of the protective demon that can be visited in the Ghidra mine in the coal mining museum in the town of Zabarze, which is located at a defunct coal mine.
Everybody gets a statue except the cobbler there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a caller. Who do we have?
Oh, we got a John on the line here.
Ah, John, Nakshimash. We're talking about the homeland today.
Hey, Dubja, Bob. Hey, it's nice to hear you back on the air. I'm sure that's what your dad would want. That, you know, as you stated. So, you know, you sound good. And,
well, thank you, John. I appreciate that.
And you know, like I said, I'm glad to see you back. And you know, I'm a big White Sox fan too, and I watch quite a bit of games, but. Since your dad passed, it seems like every time I watch it now, you know, he pops in my head, you know. Never thought about it before, but, you know, I'm associating the White Sox with your dad because he was always that big fan, you know, of the White Sox. And
right.
We always played baseball at Kosciuszko, and it was hardball, you know, and he always beat a pitcher. And, you know, he always made an effort to catch the ball, and he, of course, batted and everything like that, you know. And nobody really ever, you know, he had the limp because of the polio, but nobody ever seen him as that. Nobody ever asked, you know, and he did what everybody else did. So, you know what?
Thanks, John. That means a lot to me. You got me crying here on the show.
Yeah, we all miss him. And, you know, like you said, death is part of life. And sometimes the sadness and death, is, you know, it should be a celebration because, you know, he's in heaven now, so
right.
You know, he's not suffering anymore. And you know, we're mourning for a while, then we should be rejoicing, you know, because he's up with the good Lord, you know. So,
well, thank you, John. It's very kind words.
Yeah, and about the serpents and that. To be honest with you, I don't know the story, so I'm not.
So you never knew any of these with the dragons that are attacking Poland, apparently?
No, I'm going to have to start Googling and looking this up here. It's quite interesting as you're speaking about it.
Did you ever hear of the story of the treasure or the coal miner demon that helps people?
No, not at all.
See, this is bizarre, you know. And
well, I don't think they talk too much about
it. You know what? As you're talking about it, I'm learning now, yeah. You know, and I'm gonna start Googling and see what this is all about because it's interesting, you know.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for calling and sharing the memories of Dad. That means more to me than you'll ever. Like I said, I got tears in my eyes here. So,
well, like I said, now that every time the socks are on, right away, Bob Anderson pops in my head. You know what? Maybe he's talking to me like, where the hell were you all these years, you know?
Yeah, it took me and your boneheaded son to reconnect in college to make that work out.
Yeah. So, you know, now, like I said, when the socks come on, I immediately, Bob Anderson pops in my head, you know. So I would remember him in my prayers by every time the socks come on.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate that. We'll talk soon, okay?
Take care, Bob.
Sure. Thank you. Look at that.
Yeah.
So kind.
It's mysteriously enough, there's another caller here.
Take it.
I don't know who.
Take it live.
We'll take it live.
Hi, you're on the air, caller.
Nope.
A dead one. A dead line. Wow.
Dad?
Interesting. Well, there is somebody else here,
okay,
too.
Take the line.
I'll take the line.
Take it live. You're on the air, listener.
Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for calling in.
It's your good friend, Mark.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Been listening along. And since you're talking about another thing that's really big in Polish mythology is vampires, werewolves, and one you might know from a certain Marvel movie, the Baba Yaga.
The Baba Yaga. Yes. The Slavic witch story.
Yes.
Yes, who also gave Hellboy a run for his money in the movie as well.
Yeah, exactly. So just been listening along. I thought I'd pass you along. Just let you guys know, I sent you to the Bob After Dark Facebook page. Believe it or not, Krakow has, for their Discover Krakow thing, they have a whole thing about Polish mythology and lore, and it's got their top 20 from the city itself. So I pass it along to you, so it might help you out on your journey to find more about some Polish monsters and folklore.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Mark. We appreciate that.
Not a problem, man. Have a good rest of your show, and looking forward to hearing what else you got on your list.
Thank you so much. You have a great night.
Take care, Mark.
You too. Everybody. All
right. The Baba Yaga.
The Baba Yaga. We covered her a long time ago.
That's a very strong Polish.
It's not just Baba Yaga. The Baba Yaga. So that she's not on my list.
No.
But she is. We talked about her before, and maybe it's time to do a whole Baba Yaga special again. She is such an interesting character that I feel like most countries in that area would claim the Baba Yaga as themselves, as their own country.
Yeah.
But the Baba Yaga is definitely an interesting character in that story. So thank you, Mark, for calling in.
Yeah. I've got to go through the list now. It's amazing how you just go down the line and how much folklore and tales there are of dragons and
lots of dragons in Poland.
Dragons,
you know, yeah. You would have told me that I'm going to crack a joke because you and I, right? And it makes sense. The only thing I ever imagined us having problems with in Poland was a light bulb.
Oh, there you go. We could say that because
we are. But I mean, tell me I'm wrong, though.
Yeah. No.
Listen,
sure.
My dad tried to put a toilet seat on with a ball peen hammer when I was a kid.
Uh-huh. Why not? So, you know, there's the right way of doing things,
and then there's the Polish way
of doing things.
The other thing is, I always say, you know, the other thing would be like tying our hands together. That'd be the other enemy in Polish culture because we can't talk then. Yeah, but, you know, come to find out, we got demons in coal mines, we got dragons,
lots
and then what if I told you there was a sea bishop?
A sea bishop. Let's hear about the sea bishop.
Okay. The Curious Sea Bishop, or the Biskup Morski, I know that one in Polish, also known as the Sea Monk, is said to have been captured in the Baltic Sea in the 16th century by fishermen fishing for herring. This being had the body of a fish and the head of, well, a bishop. And it since was such a unique find that it was brought as a gift to the Polish king Zajmuk I. And they write about it in the newspaper, the Gazeta Lwowska, which was an 1823 article, which I'm not even going to try here, folks, on animals dreamt by poets and painters. Mm-hmm. I could speak the language. I can't read the language.
Yeah.
But it's Ozeratish Perzush Pertau Aymaski Zamlish. I know that. I probably butchered it because I'm reading it wrong. But anyway, in the year 1530, the same place, the Baltic Sea, the sea bishop was fished out. The head of this monstrosity looked like a bishop's miter. When the Polish king became its owner, he had released it to the sea because they say the creature displayed a great fondness of seawater. The article goes on to say that a similar being once jumped out of the sea onto a deck of a boat off the coast of Holland. It spoke good Dutch, and after smoking a pipe of tobacco it received from sailors, it returned to the sea from whence it came. And I gotta give it to those sailors from Holland. The strange Abe Sapien type creature, we went back to Hellboy stuff there, this life of water, creature from the Black Lagoon-esque character pops out of the water. What's the first thing you do? You offer it some smoke.
Why not? Try to be friendly
with this creature.
Yeah.
The story of the Polish king's encounter with the sea bishop was first put into writing by a Swiss physician and naturalist, Conrad Gessner, in the 16th century zoological story Historia Animalium. There, apart from the tale, you can also find an interesting, amazing illustration of the mythical creature. So when they call it a bishop, you know, a sea bishop, this thing kind of looks like a lizard. It's got scales. It's bipedal, three toes. It's got these claws with this talon claw at the base of its forearm. And its head is pointed up and around like the bishop's cap that he would wear in Catholic, you know, Catholicism. Most of Poland is Catholic, so that's where they probably got the concept of this bishop hat from and why they called it. But it's funny because down past its head in the illustration they drew for it, it also looks like its webbing almost looks like a religious robes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a little more, I guess, subdued than a dragon there, but that's interesting. It's another one, Bob. Put it on a list of things I'm learning here tonight.
We'll go over a couple more and we'll call it. On my list, I do have the Warsaw Mermaid. I think I'm going to save that for a better episode. Maybe we need to revisit the concept of the mermaid.
Yeah.
We haven't done it in a long time.
People don't know. They're
Well, no, that was pre-podcast days. That's when we were just a lowly radio show. That was, you know, the before days, as I call them. So maybe it's time to revisit the mermaid story.
But I'm just saying, people think mermaids as the little mermaid. It's the mermaids are – you got to be watching out for these mermaids here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not just singing in the sea, trying to be friends with you.
No. All right, let's talk about the golden duck.
The golden duck. Golden eggs.
Yes. The precious creature is said to have dwelled in a pond hidden deep in the cellars of the Ostrowski Palace in today's Tomka Street. The story goes that the duck was actually an enchanted princess ready to grant great wishes to a daring adventurer who managed to find her. In the various iterations of the legend, it is a poor shoemaker, once again
another shoemaker,
or a soldier that eventually discovers the magical bird. From the 1938 book, Legendary Wawazowski, there was a pond in the cavern filled with diamond clear water, and in the pond the golden duck was swimming. She gleamed with the peculiar brightness that had blinded him before, and on her shapely neck there hung a pearl necklace of strange beauty, and with every feather was fitted with diamonds. On her legs, which gracefully treaded the water, diamond rings were shining. Upon discovery, the golden duck turned into a princess who gave the lucky finder a pretty sum of money, telling him that if he spends it all on just himself, he'll get much more. However, the shoemaker, or soldier, depending on what depiction of the story you listen to, decided to give it to a beggar, losing his financial prospects for retaining a clear conscience. Nowadays, it's easier to find the golden duck because guess what? Poland built a statue of it.
That's their statue.
I love it. Listen, Poland apparently really likes to
love their statues.
They love their statues, one, and they also love the concept of like celebrating their paranormal, you know, culture and heritage, because you can go and see this duck for yourself. Because a statue of it sits next to the Ostrogoski Palace, and it also is right next to the Frederick Chaplin Museum. But you can go out there, and there is a fountain with a golden duck that shoots the water out of it as the sprinklers. And it's a golden duck that just sits in the middle, and it's got a golden crown upon its head and everything.
I would like to see that statue. I'm going to look that up there. Because I mean, a statue of a golden duck, a little less intimidating than a statue of a dragon. But you know, I heard of the golden goose, Bob, but never the golden duck.
The golden duck,
it's
which
in Poland.
Also,
who
it's in Poland. Who knew?
Yeah. And there's a statue.
Okay,
you can go anywhere and find a statue, probably within a mile radius.
Yeah, but we don't get paranormal statues here in America. I know we have Mothman. We have Mothman. There are various Sasquatch statues.
Are there a lot?
There's not. No.
There's
apparently
not. No.
We don't have like. There's not a lot.
No.
But people apparently have, like, in Poland, you go to Poland and there's just statues of all these mythological, you know, creatures of lore.
Not even Scotland doesn't have a Nessie statue, do they?
I'm sure they do, man.
Okay, you would think they would.
Storm the Loch. They can't stop us all.
What about a Yolcat statue? Is there a Yolcat statue?
No, but I'll tell you what, when we start the Bob After Dark Foundation, I will make sure that somebody erects a statue of the Yule Cat for you in Iceland.
One more point about statues here. There's nothing cooler than having a statue maybe of yourself. I mean, wouldn't it be cool to have a statue one day? A Bob statue? They could put in Whiting by the fountain?
You know, I remember when Whiting got the mascot museum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I petitioned hard for somebody to erect a bronze statue of me as a Ghostbuster to put in the Mascot Hall of Fame as, like, the mascot of Whiting. But hear me out. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these other celebrities have, like, statues of themselves. What I want, when you and I become, you know, big time, right? Yeah, maybe when, upon our deaths, I want a statue out in front of the studio of me and you, like, standing back to back, and you got the cape on, and I'm wearing, like, an Argyle sweater or something. Or maybe somebody wants to just put up a statue of us now.
Yeah.
Realistically, it should be in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that Wisconsin. Or, like, the Marsh Cheese Castle, if you're listening, sponsor us, because, you know.
Or next to Thaddeus Kosciusko in Kosciusko Park. There's a statue of
He's not a mythical creature, though. He's an actual general.
But if you're going to put some statues up, you might as well do it next to the general right there. But, yeah, Milwaukee would be a good spot for our statues since we're big in Wisconsin.
Yeah, if we're big in Wisconsin, you know, I think we'd get a statue in front of the Marsh Cheese Castle.
Yeah.
But if somebody out there is listening and they have an expendable income, Count Panic and I need statues somewhere out there in the world. I don't care where it's at.
Please, a good statue, because you see some of these statues. They don't look nothing like the person.
You're being picky.
Well, I mean,
you guys are going to build the statues, but make sure you don't cheap out on the detail.
There are some famous statues out there where they don't look anything like the person. It'd be nice to have a statue that looks like the
other. All right, folks, what you're hearing is Count Panic is being vain about his hypothetical statue.
Wouldn't you want to look nice in statue form? I don't know. I just think you'd want to be look appropriately in a statue form.
All right, you ready for – we got time for one more.
Sure.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, you want to talk about the basilisk?
What's that called?
A basilisk.
All right.
So a basilisk is a creature from lore, and you can see this pop up all around the world. There's different stories of this basilisk. It's something we'll talk about in the future. We're just going to be talking about the Poland iteration of the story. This is more cryptid than it is, like, you know, dragon, where – did dragons actually attack Poland? Probably not. But was there a version of the basilisk that existed somewhere in the past and scared people that much? For example, out of all these stories, the sea bishop is a story that I could legitimately be like, I believe that happened. You know, there's some hyper-intelligent sea life creature that hangs out in that neck of the woods in the waterland. I could believe the sea bishop exists. The dragons of Poland, get what I'm saying?
Maybe.
But the basilisk is an interesting story, and it happens to be the most dangerous creature of the Polish mythos. It is said to have lived in a basement of a derelict house in the Karwazi Kolo Street in Old Town, where it supposedly guarded great witches. And this was written about by somebody named Artur Ottman. It was something between a rooster and a snake. It had the head of a rooster with a huge purple comb shaped like a crown, a long, slim neck like a snake-like one, a bulgy trunk covered with black ruffled feathers and hairy legs, and tall and ending with paws that were huge and sharp claws. However, the real reason to fear the basilisk wasn't the sharp claws. Its most dangerous weapon were its owl-like eyes that glowed red and yellow. Just like a certain Mothman creature, but I digress. With one gaze from them, the beast could turn a man into stone, much like the Medusa story from Greek mythology. Many perished trying to rid Warsaw of the pesky basilisk, which, according to some accounts, wreaked havoc in the city, starting fires and killing animals. Finally, a daredevil carrying a mirror went down to the cellars on Old Town Street, where the mystical creature saw its own reflection. And you could probably guess, turned the stone itself and killed it.
A tragic ending here, Bob, but...
Hey, what if I was to tell you that you could see the basilisk today?
In statue form?
Because there is a statue of this basilisk. And it's a smaller than the other ones. It's a smaller statue, but it is in a like on the entrance of a restaurant that can be found in Old Town Market Square in Crosby. Ah,
well, here's the thing.
Okay, here's the thing.
Again, it's great that there's statues being made. I don't think every story though warrants a statue.
Everyone needs a statue.
I gotta go Poland just for the statue.
I was gonna say, listen, country of Poland, you have two countrymen here right now that are willing to come to your country. I will do a live podcast there. I don't know if there's any cons that happen in Poland.
There's gotta be a con.
You are listening to this show from Poland and you are the director of a convention, book us, please.
Yeah, why not?
I will show up. I'm a cheap date. You make sure, just pay my travel accommodations with my producer. We'll show up and we'll have the best times of our lives talking about these things at a convention. I just want to go and see the statues.
Yeah.
Because everything we've talked about so far has a statue in Poland somewhere that you can go and see.
And while we're there, we'll talk to the statue makers of those statues to get our own statues.
Get our statue in, like, the town square of Warsaw. Who's those two? Oh, that's Bob and Kyle Panic.
I mean, it's a far trip to go see our statues, but I guess as long as it's somewhere, we'll take a statue anywhere.
All right, so listen.
Yeah.
Poland. Sponsor of the show. One, sponsor of the show. Two.
The whole country of Poland.
Country of Poland. You get sponsor of the show. Two, the second important thing. Yes. Book us for a convention out there, please. Yeah. Please, somebody out there has reach in Poland convention scene. Get us booked. I will be there. I will smile. I will say hello to people. I can hold a conversation with some of them. I'm telling you, we'd be superstars.
There's a statue con, I think, out there.
Don't lie to me.
There might.
I don't care what convention it is. It could be their cooking convention. Somebody out there in the country of Poland could book us for something.
Yeah.
And I'll show up. The whole nine. You could have the whole Bob After Dark experience.
Yeah.
I just want to show up and see these statues.
Yeah. And Bob, I'll wait for a phone call from Poland right here. We'll see what we get the call. Who's in charge over there?
I don't know.
We'll get some.
There's so many more Polish myths. Maybe I, in like stories of lore and creatures, maybe we'll have to do a part two of this. But in the very least, I got a chance to like get Bob After Dark out of my system. I got to do an episode, which I really needed. And I got, for the first time since my dad died, I got like a big old smile on my face. Like, I'm happy we got to do this.
Yeah.
So what'd you think? You got to learn a little bit about the motherland tonight.
Got to learn about the motherland, Bob. Always a good time learning about the motherland. In honor of a dedicated episode to your father there, I think it was a good one, Bob. I think it was a good one.
I think if Dad was alive, normally I'd go and see them nights of shows because they live, you know, only like 10, 15 minutes away from the studio. So I'd usually stay with them after we would do the show. And I know I would walk into the house and my dad would always be sitting there after a show. Every episode I ever did, my dad would always be sitting there because he never missed an episode of Bob After Dark.
Yeah.
I'd get up the stairs and I'd see him. I'd say, Dad, he's sitting in his chair getting ready to go to bed. And Dad would say, hey, that was a good episode.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what we talked about. And I would ask Dad, hey, Dad, what'd you think of Bob After Dark this week? Oh, you know, it's... some good stories. Oh, okay, thanks, Dad.
Even if it was a Johnny Appleseed.
Oh, God, that's a deep cut.
He would still like it.
Dad listened to every episode. Never mattered. Even before he retired, he'd still listen at work to every episode we did. And it's hard to know that physically he's not able to listen anymore. And I wanted to do this, and part of me wishes I would have done this when he was alive so he can enjoy these stories with me.
I think he is enjoying the stories, Bob.
I think so, too. Yeah. And, Dad, I love you so much, man. I miss you, and thanks for being the biggest supporter of the show. You know, I'm going to end this episode this week before we say our goodbyes. My dad was so proud of me when I came to him and said, this is what I wanted to do with my life, you know, because I wasn't good at math. I just did okay in school. But the best thing I was able to do is I was able to talk. I was a good communicator. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, like, talk myself out of a bad situation. Didn't matter, you know. I didn't have the looks. best looks in the world. Kind of look like a sack of potatoes, but that's a story for another day, you know. But no matter what the situation was, my father was very proud of me no matter what I did. And he couldn't have been more proud of me over two things in my life. One was doing the Ghostbusters stuff, too, was Bob After Dark. My father had stickers for the show on him in the van, in his van, and he had buttons that he was so proud of what we did. In my father's later years, he was ridden to his chair in his bed. He had an accident, his polio finally caught up to him and couldn't walk proper anymore. But never bothered him, you know. And I'd get there and I'd talk to him a little bit about. I'd go there and we'd talk about, like, you know, show stuff. And my dad, before he got bad with the Alzheimer's, my dad would record shows on the Travel Channel, these like paranormal and ghost stories on the Travel Channel, so I could watch them with him. And my dad, I kid you not, would keep notes in a notebook for me. He's like, oh, did you know about this? And he was so interested in what I did. He was so proud. Every time I did a con, I'd always call him and he'd be like, how many people showed up to the panel? And he was always proud. Even when those numbers were bad, he'd be like, oh, get them next time. And my dad's best saying to me was, when one door closes, another opens. That was his, no matter what, how bad my life got, that was always like what he said to me. And that's something I'll always remember forever. So folks, I'm sorry. This was kind of a harder emotional episode, but something I had to do.
Of course.
And, I miss you, Dad. I love you. Do you have any, final words for the audience there, Count?
Somebody get a statue made of us. Somebody out there. Somebody out there knows how to make a statue.
Gets booked in Poland.
Whoever made the Orville Redenbacher statue, maybe local around here.
Something
get
like
us
that.
Someone. But yes, we'll think about that.
All right, Mom. I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to my dad, no matter where you are in the cosmos, I hope you're happy. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.